Well, Advent is traditionally understood as a season of impending crisis. Crisis in the sense of point of decision, turning point, before and after. The Gospels portray the coming of Jesus as a decisive break with what has been. In her poem, BC AD, Ursula Fanthorpe expresses this brilliantly. This was the moment when before turned into after, and the future's uninvented timekeepers presented arms. This doesn't mean Jesus comes from nowhere. He can only be understood in the light of the long story of God's relationship with Israel. His meaning is communicated by way of a symbol system that predates him by centuries. Nevertheless, the testimony of the Christian scriptures is that with his advent, something new is breaking in upon the world. And a key question for the gospel writers is, what makes it possible to recognise this moment? After all, if Jesus means what they think he means and fulfills what they think he fulfills, how is it that some don't see it? Hence their emphasis on people having eyes to see and ears to hear, their concern with discerning the signs of the times, and their insight that this involves the capacity to suspend certainty and trust a new way of knowing. Well, there's a sense in which I think this season of Advent, its embrace of crisis and the receptivity it encourages towards the unknown and the new, is pretty good training for contemporary life. We seem to be undergoing a prolonged crisis in relation to pretty much every facet of our existence: ecological, political, economic, social, ecclesial, and for some of us, personal. The pandemic has just helped to heighten it all, a kind of unwanted icing on the cake. We too are being asked to discern the signs of the times, to open towards a future we cannot really imagine, to give up old certainties. But there's a weariness that comes with this. I'm conscious of it myself, and Richard touched on it last week in his reflection. A couple of days ago, I read something written by a young woman about the radical uncertainty of the future awaiting her. "It's exhausting being young," she said. And it's not just the young. I don't have her uncertainty about career and employment, but I too feel weary of a world teetering on the brink, of a church whose place and role is so unclear. I even feel tired at the thought of encouraging myself or you just to keep being open, to be available for what's unfolding in our midst, all the while being patient with unknowing, persevering in the face of resistance and reaction and inertia. I just want some stuff to get sorted. Well, if we're being mature, putting on our big girl pants, as Josie would say, we know that spiritually speaking, our calling is to remain ever expectant and trusting in the face of unresolvedness. But emotionally, it can be exhausting. And this is where I wonder if there is some wisdom and resource to be had from our reading tonight, and from the witness of John the Baptist in particular. I'm thinking that there may be something in his way of being that could offer something for our living fruitfully and sustainably in a time of crisis responsive to the coming and action of God in our midst. The first thing that strikes me about John is that he's someone whose life is determined by events that are always beyond him, that always exceed him. This is actually true for all of us. But while we might expend a lot of energy in the quest for self-determination, self-importance, and control, John seems to embrace the fact that his life is not essentially for or about him. He is uncluttered by self-concern, which means there's a clarity in him. Clarity about who he is and isn't. I am not the Messiah, and I don't need to be. I am not Elijah, and I'm not aspiring to that. I am not the light, nor am I rushing around trying to become the light. I am simply faithful to my part. I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness. If I think about what makes me weary in the face of crisis, it's often to do with having become so worried about the whole of it that I lose sight of what is mine to do and be, here and now, in this moment and place, given my gifts and limits and circumstances, given my best discernment of what I'm called to. What is required of me? Achieving clarity on this question is itself a significant spiritual task. And when there is much to be done, much to be solved, it can seem almost irresponsible to confine yourself to your own part in things. But ultimately, I think this is the only true responsibility, the only true responsiveness. And it's such a relief to realise it. This is a place you can be at rest, no matter how hard or uncertain or overwhelming the time. Of course, achieving this kind of clarity doesn't mean we're then assured of where it's all heading. While John knows who he is and what his role, he doesn't know what it's ultimately about, or even what its fulfillment will look like. But he seems to be okay with that. Whereas the religious authorities who come out to test him insist on pre-established criteria for evaluating truth and effectiveness, John entrusts himself to a different kind of knowing, the knowing of the heart. In his poem, The Quickening of John the Baptist, Thomas Merton writes of the moment John is said to leap in the womb of his mother Elizabeth when she's visited by a pregnant Mary. And Merton speaks of the wise, wild baby, the unborn John, who could not see a thing. And nothing much changes for this wise, wild baby, who remains compelled his whole life to testify to that which he has not yet seen. There is risk in relying on this kind of heart knowing, this knowledge beyond knowledge. It looks suspiciously like that nutter element in religion, which supposedly just knows that God is doing this or that. But true heart knowing is not nutty. It's neither uncritical nor irrational. It's a different kind of intelligence, an attunement to things, born of non-grasping attention and humility. Our tradition holds that we dwell in a world where light does dawn in the darkness, where truth is revealed, and a deeper intelligibility may be found by those who seek it. And it seems to me that in times of crisis in particular, our task, like John's, is to cultivate the capacity of the heart's knowing, to expand our intelligence, tuning in at the level of the spirit. This capacity is connected to prayer and silence. And strangely, the more we give our attention to it, the less wearied we are by the unresolvedness of things. For in this work, we're not just waiting in a vacuum for what doesn't come, waiting frustrated and impotent. Rather, this is waiting that is itself a connection to that upon which it waits, helping to create the conditions of its appearing. And finally, what strikes me about the witness of John the Baptist is that in the end, the resolution of his waiting and watching comes with surprising gentleness. Any major crisis, personal, social, religious, involves a degree of turbulence, confusion, anxiety. There is sound and fury as an old order is disrupted and a new one strains to come into being. In the Gospels, the coming of the Son of Man is understood to be surrounded by agitation in the heavens and on the earth. Yet Jesus is said specifically to warn against identifying God with the agitation. If anyone says to you at that time, "Look, here is the Messiah," or "Look, there he is," do not believe it. Similarly here, the figure of John the Baptist begets agitation, his call to repentance, the sense of urgency, the resistance of the old order. But when the presence of God in the person of Jesus is finally seen, it comes in the form of a dove, a symbol of peace that descends and remains on him. In my experience, and perhaps this resonates with yours, crises about relationships or identity or life direction can involve long periods of suffering, as we're tossed by fear, indecision, and resistance. But if we're faithful to the process, to the watching and the waiting, there comes a moment when we break through into the still point. A small, shy truth arrives, as Michael Lunig says. Something usually quite simple and clear and liberating, even if it can also seem huge and impossible and painful. And when it arrives, it's as if we recognise it, even though we didn't know it in advance. Just as John insisted that I myself did not know him. before he pointed with absolute assurance to Jesus as the one of whom he had been speaking all along. His is not the strident certainty of a self-assertive opinion, but a deep knowing of the truth, an unveiling that sheds light and brings peace and remains. We celebrate this Advent season in and as a time of crisis. Yet it seems to me there are signs that a deeper knowing of truth is slowly rising in our world. A heart knowing of our interconnectedness with the natural world. A recognition of and receptivity to the wisdom of Indigenous peoples. A yearning for a more integral form of economic and social life. This knowing, this heart knowing that's arising is contested. There is resistance, reaction, the breakthrough not yet fully realised. And we are wearied at times by a sense of prolonged unresolvedness as we struggle to birth new ways of being human on this earth. But John, I think, helps us imagine a way to keep faith with it all. With him, then, may we learn what is ours to do and be. And may we cultivate our hearts knowing so as to recognise amidst the turmoil and confusion the light and peace of Christ among us and drawing us on.